Carol Fritz is a partner in Offshore Services for Lawyers, based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. They discuss offshore legal work.
I want to open our conversation today, Carol, first of all, by saying thank you for joining us, and secondly, by asking you for our listeners to explain what kinds of legal work you know that have been offshored. Offshore has been a noun, but we've now made it a verb. What kinds of legal work have been offshored?
Well, thanks for having me, Ed, and actually you're definitely right about how these words move into the vocabulary and get changed. Initially, the work that was offshored was document review, sort of routine document review that was done for large companies like DuPont and GE and large firms like Pepper Hamilton. And the next wave of offshoring was work that was fairly technical and scientific involving patents. So that's actually not surprising because attorneys who do patent work are used to working with scientists and engineers. They're used to giving their work to people who are you know, not in their firms. But at this point, offshoring has taken off, and now just about everything that you could think of can be offshored, legal memos, complaints, briefs, appellate briefs, multi-district research, just about everything, as long as you have the qualified people to do it.
Well, I remember reading an article not all that long ago where I believe it was General Electric was talking about the fact that they had lawyers in India, I think was the example they used, and that because of that, they were able to expedite the speed of delivering their legal services to their their sales teams, and that came about as a result of the clock. They're based in the East Coast, and India is on a different time zone,
right.
They have sales reps in Europe and other parts of the world, so that they really were able to cover the world now in 24 hours, 24/7, so to speak. Is that how? Is that one of the advantages then of offshoring?
Definitely, Ed. That's definitely an advantage because a lawyer here can give their work to somebody on the other side of the world, and basically they are working when the lawyer here is sleeping, and it can make for a 24-hour law firm.
And if a law firm, like a large law firm, such as Latham Watkins, as one example, with offices around the world in Asia and Europe and so forth, are they able then to have the same advantage that smaller might have by offshoring? Is the principle the same?
Definitely. The large firms already have their presence all over the world. You know, the Latham Watkins, Jones Day, DLA Piper, those firms are already utilizing, you know, the 24-hour clock by using their people all over the world. So this is an opportunity for other people who aren't at that level to get involved and to have the same advantages.
Well, if other law firms can now use the clock the same way that the large firms do, is there an advantage for a large law firm in terms of cost savings if they were to do offshore as contrasted to keeping work inside their own shop but in another country?
Well, they do. I mean, they do. When they send it to the Philippines and they hire, you know, Filipinos, they pay them Filipino wages.
Okay, so it may be part of the same firm, but their wage scale then is based on the country of origin of the work.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, there's something actually... there was something that was called in the United States near-sourcing, which is just sending things to other states that had lower labor costs. So there's, you know, this outsourcing, which is sending stuff out of the firm, near-sourcing, and now there's offshoring.
Okay. So that's an interesting use of the phraseology. I know one example, a major California firm, had most of its back office materials and tasks near-sourced, I think is the word you used, by sending it and creating its own office in either Virginia or West Virginia. But the cost differential for them was significant between that office and their California office.
Yes, it would be, especially West Virginia.
Okay. Well, for those practitioners who have a small practice, a smaller office, what difference would that make for them? And I guess coupled with that are two questions. One, why should I as a third party care about that? And also, more importantly, how can we assure quality control when we're sending work away from us that way?
Well, small law firms can use offshoring in a number of ways. One of the things is that the small practitioner, the small firm, often has problems with managing the workflow. So if there's extra work and there isn't enough to hire an associate, that work can be offshored. So the firm has the advantage of having the work done and not incurring, you know, the expenses of having an associate or the overhead of having an associate.
So in other words, it might be an interim step until there's enough work to actually hire an associate in-house at a later time.
That's one scenario.
Okay.
Another scenario is that for work that tends to be routine, for instance, I guess complaints and personal injury cases would be an example, that work can be offshored because it's routine and it can just be done, you know, on a routine basis because it just is fairly repetitive. There's not much of a difference in the forms, and they're just, you know, filling out forms, claims forms the same way. I guess people would, you know, say like document reviews is similar because it's, you know, it's forms.
Mm-hmm.
The essence of legal practice really is, the heart of legal practice is really representing clients. And all of this legal support stuff that we're talking about is stuff that doesn't really impact the client directly and can be delegated and has been delegated historically to other people, to law clerks or to paralegals in the firm. And that's basically the model
okay.
that offshoring uses.
And but with offshoring, you are actually getting somebody to do the work who might be licensed in one of the 50 states of this country, but a citizen of and living in another country.
Well, the ethics of offshoring, I mean, we're not a law firm. Offshore Services for Lawyers, we're not a law firm. We're just the legal services provider. The legal work is done under the close supervision of the attorney that orders the work done. And we actually use both email and Skype. Are you familiar with Skype?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. To have our attorneys in the United States communicate with their attorneys in India so that they are definitely under the close supervision of the attorneys. And there have been a couple of ethics opinions. There's an ethics opinion from the City of New York Bar Association and another one from San Diego supporting the idea that this is the same thing. It's analogous to having a paralegal do work in your firm.
Okay.
And honestly, Ed, in the internet age, it doesn't really matter if you have somebody, an associate down the hall, or you have somebody on the other side of the world doing the work.
Well, that raises an interesting question about confidentiality. I think that you're right when you talk about the new paradigm of today's world, but still, there is an issue of confidentiality, is there not, or lack thereof, the further away from you the work gets done?
Well, I'm not sure that the distance is is the critical thing. I think it's the attention paid to confidentiality that is of utmost concern. And curiously enough, these offshore facilities, I know our offshore facility, Offshore Services to Lawyers, has been set up to be very concerned about confidentiality. And law firms that were set up in the United States that were set up hundreds of years ago were not. So basically, we have from the get-go set in place a proactive approach where all the employees sign confidentiality agreements, can't take anything out of the building, any equipment or any CDs out of the building. They are randomly searched upon entry and exit. We have high-grade firewalls on our internet, and we use encryption for everything that goes across public networks. I mean, I dare to say this is better than a lot of firms. I'm not going to say every firm. I'm sure there are firms out there that are very concerned with confidentiality, but I know firms where people can take CDs home.
So unlike some high-profile government examples that have surfaced in the last few months, where the laptop contained security information without clearance, you're saying that at least in your firm, whether it be in the United States or whether it be in India, there are some really tight security controls already in place.
Yes, and they were set in place proactively.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a final question, and that is, where do you see the industry going 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now? I think, as we know from articles we've read and, of course, your personal experiences, that the industry is getting recognition, and many of the larger firms anyway and larger companies are beginning to do that which you're in business for. Where do you see this in the future, particularly with respect to the smaller firm?
Well, I think it's only going to get bigger and bigger. It's been a million-dollar business. Hilda Brandt has predicted in the next 5 years it's going to be a $10 billion industry. I think it's kind of analogous to what happened with law firms and marketing, where like 5 years ago you didn't hear of any law firms who had a marketing person. Basically, marketing was left up to a partner who kind of did it part-time, and now the major firms have people, most of whom have a business background or a combined business and legal background, who are responsible for bringing in that business. Law firms tend to work, they tend to work by precedent, and so it's hard for them to get onto something new, but when they do get onto it, and they see the quality of what's coming out of the offshore business. I mean, that's one of the things that actually my company really likes to do, is we like to give people samples. We like to say, take a look at the work. I mean, before I got involved with Offshore Services to Lawyers, I questioned people that they'd done work for, and I found that there was a law firm in New York where a lawyer bills out at over $700 an hour, and he has work done by Offshore Services to Lawyers that he passes through at the rates that we charge him as a vehicle to build his business development, so that people who are getting started in their businesses can afford his firm, and as they get bigger and make more money, that then they can afford to pay his fees. So we have a very high-level product.
Well, it's interesting how the world of the legal community has changed. I know in 1995 I was successful in getting a trademark for the phrase the business of law, and in that period, almost an era ago, a generation ago, if you will, lawyers never thought that those four words could fit in the same sentence. And today, that's what we're talking about. We're a profession, but we're implementing our profession in a business-like way.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. I mean, I am personally very professional, but it is a business, and we're selling legal services. We run our business like any business. We run it on experience. We run it on the satisfaction of our current clientele and, you know, giving people samples of what we're doing because, you know, this is something that people haven't seen before.
Well, the samples you're talking about, I'm sure, are not like the cookie jar where as you pass by the market, they give you a sample. But nevertheless, I think it's probably a very good business tactic to show people the quality of the work that your firm and folks like you do so that they get a higher sense of comfort of implementing something that's new to them.
Absolutely, and they're available, you know, by request at our website.
Okay. Well, your name is Carol Fritz. I will not call you Mrs. Fields, but I do want to thank you for joining us this evening, and I look forward to chatting with you again in the near future.
Thanks, Ben.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.